Welcome to The Pen and the Yad. Rabbi Michael Siegel of Anshe Emet Synagogue in Chicago talks with author Jonathan Eig about the double Torah portion of Achrei Mot and Kiddushim. Whatever happened to love your neighbor as yourself? The Derek Chauvin verdict.
You know, I was mentored by Rabbi Seymour Cohen, a very fine American rabbi, and whenever I would become nervous or express my concern that I don't know what I'm going to talk about this week, he would always say, "My boy, the Torah will provide." And I think that's especially true this week. The week that we have the verdict in the Chauvin trial, the responses across the country, both from the president and world leaders around the globe, we are reading the portion of Kiddushim, which is a portion that focuses on what does it mean to create a holy society. And it comes to a crescendo with the words, "V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha," love your neighbor as yourself. Now, how's that for being relevant?
Right. Yeah, the Torah provides. It's very relevant, and there's a lot there for us to talk about because loving your neighbor is not always so simple, right? Loving your neighbor includes people like Derek Chauvin. So, how do you reconcile that? How do you reconcile the fact that everyone's a neighbor, not just the innocent?
Right. So, is this very famous three-word phrase in Hebrew? Is it just an aphorism? It's sort of like when we tell kids, if you want to have a good friend, you need to be a good friend. Those kinds of things. The golden rule, right? And great for kids, but, for adults, it's more complicated.
Well, it's definitely more complicated. That doesn't mean it's useless.
That's exactly the point. It's up to us as to how relevant it is. It's up to us as to whether it actually does have meaning in the real world. I use that phrase, the real world, because so often you'll hear people say, oh, that works in the Bible or that works in fairy tales, but in the real world, not so much. And I think the tension in the Bible is taking these great ideas of what does it mean to create a holy society and bringing it to the real world.
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, one of the things I've been really wrestling with this week is how many of our institutions are built on something that is not really, loving of our neighbor. We've created a relationship between, police and citizens in many cases where the default is anything but love. The default is mistrust, distrust, antagonism. We've built that up over the entire history of our country. And how do you then undo it and say, wait a second, love our neighbors. Don't forget, love our neighbors.
Right. How do you take something that is a great tagline or maybe a sermon and take it outside of the house of worship and apply it on a day-to-day basis? And I think, by the way, again, the Torah does provide. Because if you examine the Torah reading of Kiddushim, it starts with a improbable statement. You will be holy, it says, because I, the Lord your God, am holy. You will be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy. And I think this is this statement is a watershed in human history. It's not as though Jews invented the idea of the holy or ascribed a sacredness to the gods. That I don't think is a Jewish idea at all. What I think is a uniquely Jewish idea is that human beings have the stuff of holiness within them if they choose to engage it. That, I think, is a very powerful statement. This idea of what does it mean to be created in the image of God, that's not something that is automatic. We have to engage it in order to be that. Otherwise, we're really not only no different than the animals, but we actually are worse than the animals because animals don't kill for sport. I think in many ways, human beings treat other human beings far worse than animals treat other animals.
I hear what you're saying about choosing holiness, but I'm more interested in the definition of choice, because, okay, I choose holiness, bring it on. Is that all I have to do is say that I want to be holy? I suspect that's not enough. I suspect that you have to act it out. Love is the verb, which, as we've talked about before, the proof is in your actions, not in your intent.
Right. So you might think that this portion that begins, "You will be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy," would then continue with a whole variety of ritual actions. In other words, how do we become holy? Well, you offer sacrifices. You go to the mikveh. You put yourself in a state of ritual purity. You might expect that. But in fact, what the portion is talking about are a whole variety of laws that are action steps, right? And do's and don'ts, and regarding how we treat one another, whether it's how we treat the poor, how we treat those on the margins of society. It's a very powerful portion because it really focuses on societal law. The crescendo moment in the portion is v'ahavta re'acha kamocha, which can mean love your neighbor as yourself, but as one rabbi said, it's better translated as love your neighbor because he is like you. And what I'm suggesting here is that our actions lead our vision. How we approach one another, how we think about one another, how we act towards one another. And so I could try to convince you that all people are equal. But in fact, what the Torah, I think, is saying is that we learn by doing. We learn by focusing on our actions and not our thinking. It's one thing to say all men are created equal, all people are created equal. But unless I'm acting on it, then they're simply words. It's just a nice phrase that makes a nice stained glass window of the ceiling at Anshamet. In order to actualize it, you have to act on it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, you know, we've seen throughout our history, you know, that the country has not lived up to those words in the Constitution, a Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, endowed with the rights, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. It hasn't worked out that way. And we've, in fits and starts, seen action, seen efforts to add meaning to that, to make that those words true. It's a struggle, right? And we're still not there. And you know, if it hadn't been for the video camera recording the murder of George Floyd, would we have seen justice in this kind of a case, or would the system have failed yet again? I'm really interested in your view on that video camera, because it's only when people are held accountable, it's only when public has a view of what's happening that people are forced to deal with the consequences of their actions sometimes. And shouldn't our moral values be enough? Shouldn't our attempt to be holy in the way that God is holy, shouldn't that be enough to bring justice?
In theory, but it hasn't worked since the dawn of humankind. Look, the reality is that human beings are flawed, and they are often going to err. That's just part of the human condition. And what's fascinating is that you have two laws in Kedoshim, amongst others, which are about don't favor the rich over the poor in justice, don't steal, and, you know, respect the other person's property. It says, you shall not insult the deaf, because obviously they can't hear you, or place a stumbling block in front of the blind, or don't trip a blind person, because they won't be able to identify you. But what follows here, Jonathan, is this: you shall fear your God. If these are such obvious things, why does the Torah have to tell you that, by the way, God is watching and you should be fearful about that? And it's precisely because these are the kinds of crimes, they're very easy to commit and no one will know. How would the person who doesn't hear be able to even know that you were cursing them? Or the person who is blind know that it was you that stuck your foot out and tripped them? God knows. And so what I'm suggesting is that before there were smartphones with cameras, the notion in the Torah is that God's watching, right? So God is the ultimate video camera. and there will be a reckoning. And the reality, of course, is that the Israelites often didn't take that seriously and paid the price for it. But at the same time, God never gave up on them. God understood that they were not perfect, that they were prone to mistakes, and that's part of the human condition, and the goal is to continue to become better, right? So in a sense, our society has the ability to capture images, and it's very possible that Officer Chauvin wouldn't have been convicted without that video of what had happened. But now that we have that, what do we do with it? And rather than simply saying, well, the society is bad and everything about it is evil, the Torah's view is we need to accept responsibility and we need to continue to try to reach higher to fulfill this vision of holiness in a society. In other words, to be true to who we can be.
So we're helped if we live as if we thought we were being filmed all the time. And I don't know, there's something troubling about that we need to feel like we're being watched. I mean, it's one thing to feel like you're being watched by God, who can judge you with some perspective and balance and knows that you're flawed. It's still kind of a haunting image to me to think about that.
Well, let's be careful there, because that doesn't mean there's not punishment, right? That doesn't mean that that people don't pay for their crimes. What the Torah is saying is that God is merciful, but God is also a God of justice. And, you know, in terms of your notion of God watching, there's a very famous story of a rabbi who was lying on his deathbed, and he was sort of in and out of consciousness, and his chassidim were standing over him and saying, you know, Rabbi, what is your last wish? What's your great hope? And he says, my hope is that people will fear God as much as they fear other people. His chassidim were saying, well, he must be delirious. He can't possibly mean that. They said, Rebbe, did you really mean to say that people should fear God as much as they fear human beings? He says, absolutely. He said, when people do something wrong, what do they say? I hope no one sees. But they never say, I hope God doesn't see, right? And so in a way, that's kind of the ultimate statement. If you live with a consciousness of who you can be or a consciousness of God and understand that you're failing yourself, but you're also failing God and what God believes you, the person you can be and should be, that's a very powerful moment in a person's consciousness. It's when we put it away, when we pretend that God can't see or that, I'll just get away with it this time. Look how smart I am. When in fact you're really doing something against yourself. That's the danger. And I think by having videos, that does help us. At the same time, I do have to say, what we often see is that it depends on what angle you're looking at it from, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to think that you shouldn't go around wondering if there's someone filming you at this moment. You should go around knowing that God is watching you at every moment, that sounds like.
But how do you get there? In other words, you shouldn't have to worry about it. But in real life, we're human, we're flawed. And so you do. You know, you do. I can't allow this podcast to end without asking you, who have been immersing yourself in the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, how do you think Dr. King would respond to this moment?
I've been really thinking about this a lot lately because I'm getting to the point in my research where I have access to the tapes that the FBI made of King. And one of the things that happens when a government decides to tape someone, we're talking about, you know, citizens videotaping the police. But one of the things that happens when the government decides to tape phone calls and install bugs in hotel rooms is that you not only get the activity that you were suspicious of, you get everything. So you are opening the door to all kinds of unintended consequences. And it's because you are approaching this with a cynical view where you believe this man has something to hide, because you have to make a choice about who you wiretap and who you don't, right? And they're wiretapping King because they think that he's a threat, that he's a revolutionary, that he's in league with communists, that he's black, obviously plays a huge role in this. And once you do that, once you cast suspicion on someone and you decide that they're worthy of surveillance, you put out this sweeping net. Unless King is a saint, you're going to find things out about him that are unattractive. And that is not the kind of godly surveillance that we talk about, right? That is surveillance with a malicious intent that causes all kinds of unintended consequences. And I'm really wrestling with that in my research, hear King saying things that I shouldn't be hearing. But he said them. What role do I play in this, in perpetuating this? Does it belong in my book? Because we know he said these things. It's really a great challenge for me to think about.
And a great responsibility. But what do you think King would say about the verdict yesterday?
Well, I think he would say it's long overdue, that, and his case proves it. Police have been the targets of law enforcement since slavery. It's built into the system that Black people were meant to be controlled in this government, and that this is just part of that, the evolution of that. And it's, as many people are saying today, this is a great victory for justice, but it's still all too rare that, you know, police have had a free pass on this kind of behavior for far too long.
That's all true, but it also speaks to the power of an image and the importance of laws that guide our behavior. Because what did it take? It took a video where people couldn't look away, right? And we're not always going to have those videos to look at. And go back to the 60s when you started seeing policemen putting dogs on people or beating with them batons or using water cannons, and suddenly the American people couldn't look away and they had to look up and they had to see what was going on. And suddenly you start to see new legislation at the same time, right? And Dr. King is kind of catapulted into a national position. So too, I think these videos are, the images are, have a powerful role. But unless we are willing to look at ourselves and look at our daily actions, look at our prejudices seriously, but also continue to monitor our actions, not only as if we're watching, but also that God is watching. I think that's the only way forward to fulfill not only the vision of our founding fathers, but also the vision of our Torah reading this week. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Rabbi.